Today we're finishing off. We've been spending the whole month of August in these verses, the ones that Chris just read for us, from John 15. And if you remember, if you've been with us these last 3 weeks, you remember that these words that Jesus talked, he spoke them right before he was going to die, right? He knew. He was on his way to the garden, and so he knew that he was going to be dead. He knew his disciples were going to be fearful and scattered and confused. They were going to lose all their stability, you know, the source of all their belief, their strength. And so he was telling them these words just before his arrest. And if you follow our logic, here's what we've kind of learned over the last 3 weeks. First week we saw, look, hey, Jesus is the only source of life that will not disappoint, so remain in him, right? He's the only one. If we build our life, if our source of energy, if our source of anything comes from anything outside of Jesus, eventually it will disappoint us. It will not live up to what it promises. And Jesus is the only true vine, the only true source. We said, well, if that's true, then the logical thing is we want to remain in him. And so week two, we said, okay, well, that's great. If Jesus is the only source, then we want to remain in him. And we do that by just remaining in relationship with him. And we saw that we just got to live in dependence, right? Live in dependence on Jesus and do the things the way Jesus did them. Just kind of follow along. We said, well, that's what we're going to do. That's how we connected to this only source of life. And then last week, we said, well, when that happens, then we have this really interesting thing is we then bear fruit. Because when we let that kind of relationship change who we are, flow out of us to other people, we bear fruit. Now, doesn't that look fairly straightforward? He's the only source of life, so remain in him. Here's how we do it, and when we do, we're fruitful. You say, it's pretty straightforward. No big deal. So why do we often feel like this guy? Now, those that have been around here know this is not a new branch, right? Do you remember now 2 weeks ago? This was fresh and green and flexible, and now it's just, it's brittle, and the leaves are falling all over the place, right? It's a mess because it has been disconnected from the vine. That one's been disconnected for even longer. And you know what's interesting about that? When that thing was disconnected from the vine, immediately after, what happened? It was still green. It still looked alive. It still looked flexible. It still looked good. But the second it was disconnected, it was dead. It just didn't know it yet. It just took time. And I wonder why this sometimes seems to happen with regards to this process. Because we say, oh, this is what it is. And yet, it doesn't always seem to happen. We're like, well, why is this so hard? It's so simple. It's so straightforward. We just do this. And over time, we struggle, we fight. We're like, oh, I can't believe, why am I not feeling close? I feel more like this branch than I do like something that's attached to the vine. And what happens is it's a very gradual process, right? Any of you ever got married and you were skinny when you got married? Do you remember those days? I remember those days. I still remember the weight I was on my wedding day. And then the first year of marriage, it was like 10 pounds, right? Because what reason is there to go to the gym anymore, right? So you gain 10 pounds, right? And then your wife says, oh, you're still handsome, I still love you. And you're like, okay. And then you kind of creep up a pound at a time. And after 30 years, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, my goodness. You know, and you look back at your wedding pictures, and you're like, I don't remember that guy. You know how that all happened? A little bit at a time. And a lot of times when it comes to abiding in Jesus, we drift a little bit at a time. So, if this is the logical flow of things that we've looked at, but it's sometimes really difficult. What I want to look at this morning, this is what I'm going to close this whole series with, is, well, why? What are the barriers? What are the things that stop this from happening? When we look through these verses, what do we imply, or what does Jesus kind of show us that shows that there are barriers that actually keep us from connecting to this true source of life, the only source of life that won't disappoint, that'll make us fruitful and change who we are? What are the things that stop that from happening? So I'm going to look at three of them this morning. There's probably more, but I think these three kind of grab a lot of them. So let's look at one at a time, okay? So here's the first. Barrier number one. Busyness. Anybody feeling awkward yet? How long does it take you to be uncomfortable in silence and just sitting? You know, it's very interesting. I actually had my notes to do that for 60 seconds, and I thought, there's no way I'm doing this for 60 seconds. 30 seconds was really, really long. This whole section, Jesus is talking to his disciples. Remember, he's trying to be encouraging, and he says to them, remain in me as I also remain in you. Okay? Now, there's a picture that comes with remaining, of abiding, the old word is, of being connected. What happens in the United States, and particularly in the Northeast, is we live a pace of life that is just crazy. It's fast, it's busy, it's going all the time. Let me give you some statistics here. When it comes to taking vacations, Americans are some of the worst people in the world. Did you know that? Most countries mandate a certain amount of time off. USA is one of only 13 countries around the world that actually doesn't mandate or guarantee that you get paid on a stat holiday. Right? And yet, even though we're one of those countries, over half of Americans in 2017 didn't use all their vacation. Like, oh my goodness. Okay? Not only that, when we work longer hours. So we work longer hours than almost every other country. We're behind a few. Do you know which ones we're behind? Russia, China, Korea. These are not model countries, right? It's like we're behind all the other ones that are like us. We're ahead of all, you know, more hours. And then you look at how we do our families. They did a study recently that found 88% of children are involved in extracurricular activities all the time. And I think the number was about half would often do it two on the same day. So we're running kids and we're running people all over the place all the time. And that means we don't sleep as much. Right? I know that because I can see all of you that fall asleep on Sundays. And I always love it because they always come up after and say, I was just looking at my phone, Pastor. I wasn't actually falling asleep. If you're going to do that, don't let your head do the snap. Okay? That's what gives you away every single time. Okay? But you know what? 80 years ago, almost 60% of Americans got at least 8 hours of sleep. Today, that number is 35%, and 1 in 7 regularly get less than 5. See, this is how busyness works. God says, Jesus is saying, look, abide in me, spend time with me, get connected with me. And we get so busy that it doesn't work. We don't. And what we actually do is we follow Jesus. We often do it this way. We are more like this. Anybody seen this on their phones? Low battery, okay? And what instead happens, we see this little thing, you know, now we're down to 10%, we're down to 5%. We think, oh my goodness, it's low battery, I'm going to run out of battery. So they quickly go, we plug it in, and we charge it up to 12%. And then we're like, oh, but I can't take any more time, I got to go. And you get on our day, and we spend the day, and it's like dribs and drabs, and we're always worried that our phone's going to run out of battery, and we won't be able to use it and all that stuff. And so many of us live our lives that way. We plug in. Oh, gee, I know I need to abide. I'll plug in just enough. I mean, it'll get my battery back up to 10%, and then I'll be good for another couple of hours. It's kind of how busyness works. And our schedules are so full. Now, some of you, this is not a schedule issue. If you're retired, if you're someone who's kind of a slower pace of life person, you're an introvert, you're like, oh, your kids, you're gone. You're an empty nester. You're like, my schedule's fine. I'm not that busy. So let me ask you this, because there's a second piece to busyness. Because for some of you, it's not a schedule thing. It's never being able to be quiet. Those same studies say that the average person in the United States watches 35 and a half hours of TV a week. Do you know over the course of a year, that's 77 days? And that people spend another average of 3.5 hours a day on their phones, which is another 25 hours. I wonder, are you one of those people that whenever you're home, the TV has to be on, radio has to be on, Spotify's got to be going? When you're in the car, first thing you do is turn the radio on. When you have that period, you know, when you're in between appointments, you're at the doctor's office, there's stuff happening, you're waiting for the oil to be changed, you have to be on your phone, you have to be talking to someone, you have to be doing something. It's kind of like a busyness of the mind. And even when we take time with Jesus, it's kind of hurried, it's got an agenda, we quickly read, write, pray. And what that means, what all that means is that for the average person in our culture, right, here in the Northeast, is that we work long hours, we don't take enough vacation, we're shepherding multiple children all over the place, we're watching TV, spending time on our phones and devices, and falling exhausted into the bed each day and not getting enough sleep. Does that describe anybody else's life? And you know the worst part is? We wear this as a badge of honor. Look at all the stuff we do. We're busy. So how do you break this barrier? Because I'm telling you, if we are this busy all the time, you will not be able to remain in Jesus. Not the way he designed it. So how do we break this barrier? How do we take this barrier, this low battery mode? Well, here's how we remove the barrier. It's by asking this question, why am I so busy? Really? Okay? Because now if I ask you this question, why are you so busy? Because I hear this all the time, right? We talked about this briefly. You know, I'm busy, busy. Well, why? And the answer is usually something like this. Well, I just have so much, it has to get done. I mean, it's got to get finished. If I don't do it, nobody will. So you guys have said this before. Or those of us who are a little more proud say, well, I'm the only one who knows how to do this right. Can't let anybody do this. I'm the only one who does this the way I'm supposed to. Things will fall apart if I don't. I'm going to get fired if I don't. I need to be more productive. Come on. You're all really smart people, right? You know that those are surface reasons. And by the way, we're not talking about a busy week, right? Everybody has a busy week or a busy season of life or a busy month. I mean, those things happen. What I'm talking about is the systematic, always, always busy all the time. Where when you finally have a day or a week where you're relaxed, you're like, oh my goodness, it's been like 6 months since this has happened. That's what we're talking about. So if you want to remove this, you got to ask yourself, because before you can remove there, you have to understand why you do it. It all boils down really to three reasons. People are usually busy because they're worried about what people think. Because when someone all of a sudden says they're dropping over to your house, all of a sudden it gets busy. There's laundry to pick up. There's stuff to clean. There's bathrooms to wipe down. There's floors to vacuum. There's a lawn to mow because, you know, the in-laws are coming in to visit. Or maybe you're at work and you've done your job and it's 5, but nobody else leaves till 6:30. And you're thinking, I can't be the first person that leaves every time. I just keep working. What does it look like to other people? We're worried about that. I think that's why we wear this as a badge of honor, by the way. How about this? It makes me feel better about myself. Because some of you are like, I don't care what other people think. But you know what? I'm just a productive person. I work all the time. I get stuff done. My motor runs high. I don't need much sleep. Look at all these things I can do. And in the process, you begin to feel important. You begin to feel good about yourself. You begin to feel about all these things. And we just kind of shrug it off by saying, well, I'm just not a lazy person. Why do we do this? So we can get the next promotion. To have more money. So that we work longer hours. So we can get the next promotion. So that we can have more money. So we can work longer hours. I mean, it's a cycle. It never stops. And then for some people, it's just simply this. They find silence and solitude uncomfortable. You don't like doing nothing. I heard a quote once that said, the problem with doing nothing is you never know when you're done. Which I thought was pretty good. But I wonder, I mean, you talk to people and they say, oh yeah, I tried this once. Oh yeah, I remember I was quiet for 15 minutes, I fell asleep. That's not really for me. Oh, I tried that one thing, you know, I was trying to be quiet, I left everything off, and then my mind was scattered, it was all over the place. Yeah, I'm not that kind of person. I wonder if it's just that when we let our mind rest, it goes to dark places we would prefer to avoid. Friends, this is my single biggest struggle. Busyness. Because there's always more people to meet, more study you can do, more vision to plan, more projects to accomplish, more problems to solve. And you understand that's all good stuff. It's not even bad stuff. It's good stuff. But if you remember, busyness and productivity do not equal fruitfulness. And so we have to ask ourselves the question, why am I doing all these things? Really? Why am I doing them? And then what adjustments, God, are you asking me to make? I don't know what that is for you, but it's a good question. I was going to say it's going to get lighter as we go on. It really doesn't. So just strap yourselves in. We're going to go to barrier number two. Here we go. Here's barrier number two, and I see this in these verses. It's this, viewing God as an adversary. This whole thing starts out, and he's talking about God as the gardener. Remember? He's the one who prunes. And we read this. We say, he, God, cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. So it'll be even more fruitful. We talked about this, right? If you were here last week, we talked about this whole idea of pruning and embracing pruning. And we saw that God loves us too much not to prune us, right? He wants, because he knows what is necessary for us to enjoy and get connected to him and enjoy the kind of life that he designed for us. Sometimes good, sometimes small, sometimes good things, sometimes, you know, big. He's in the business of pruning. And I wonder how many of us in that process see God as an adversary. Do you remember the movie Bruce Almighty? Right? There's this great quote in there when he's kind of getting all irritated. He says this: God is just a mean kid with a magnifying glass, and I'm the ant. He could fix my life in 5 minutes if he wanted to, but he'd rather burn off my feelers and watch me squirm. Remember that? And I wonder how many of us see God that way. And you're like, no, it's not. I don't see God that way. I would never look at God that way. I don't see God like that. Well, let me ask you a couple questions. Have you ever said this? Oh, okay. What's the lesson I need to learn here so we can just move on? How about this? Again? Come on, God, what do you got against me? How about this one? Why do these kinds of things always happen to me? Come on, God, cut me a break. Or, my favorite, really? Or maybe we don't say those things, but we just look around and we look at other people who aren't nearly as nice and good as we are, and we see their life and we're like, how come their life is so easy and I got to deal with all this? You cannot. And see, so when we begin to see God in this context, right, it's easy to view God then as an adversary. At very best, he's kind of a neutral third party. But let me tell you, you cannot remain close in intimacy with someone you don't think is in your corner. Because if they're your enemy, or they're someone who's an adversary, or someone who's not for you, you cannot and will not want to draw close to them. And you know this. Because in your own life, when you have people who are your enemies, who are talking behind your back, they're gossiping about you, you're not like buddy-buddy friends. It just doesn't happen. Your best friends are the people that you can sit, look straight across the table, share everything in your lives with, because you know that they're in your corner. And a lot of times we unconsciously begin to see God as an adversary. I ran across a great statement this week. It was from Tim Keller. And he said this. He said, we have this belief that normal, ordinary life should be smooth, happy, comfortable, and uneventful. And if it's not, somebody messed up. And either I messed up, other people messed up, or God is messing with me. Let me be clear. I mean, bad stuff does happen. I mean, let's be honest, right? This is what life is. This whole presupposition, this belief, this underlying belief that if we live right and do things, normal life is good. It's uneventful. It's smooth. Somewhere deep down, Americans like to believe this. It's just not true. Jesus lived the perfect life. He never made any mistakes, and his life was a mess. He had no house. He was a homeless guy who ended up getting killed by his enemies. And yet somehow we think that life's supposed to be normal. It's just not. Bad stuff happens. Miscarriages, loss of a job, a wayward child, money problems, a car that's in need of repair, infertility, death. The list goes on. And the temptation in the middle of all that stuff is to begin to see God as somebody who's an adversary, who's against me and not for me. And yet the entire reason Jesus was saying this to his disciples was to actually encourage them to say, look, God's on your side. He's with you. He wants to walk alongside you. He is for you. You have an enemy who is trying to separate you from God. And if he can't get you to stop believing in Jesus, then what he's going to try and do is put as much distance between you as he can so that your relationship is no good. And that's what's going on. So how do you remove this barrier? You know how you do it? It's with truth. Because all that stuff is a lie. And the way you remove this barrier is remembering, repeating, and always embracing this truth that God is never, ever against you. He is for you. And even when all that stuff that happens, that life is miserable and all these things are going on, God says, yeah, I know it's not supposed to be that way. That's not how I designed it. But I am for you, and if you will cooperate with me, this will turn out for your good. Even the terrible life stuff, he can use for our good, because that's how good he is. That's barrier number two. Barrier number three, my favorite. Disobedience and sin. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Right? He's talking about remaining in him. That's my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciple. And then he says, as my Father has loved me, so I've loved you. Now remain in my love. And then he finishes this little phrase by saying, If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. Just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. So what is he talking about? This isn't about doing all the right things or God's going to cut you off. That's not even remotely what this is about, right? So this isn't about I got to do all the right things. And a lot of religion is like this. You have to say the right things, do the right things, act the right way, believe the right things, do all these correct things so God will love you. No, that's not what this is about. But he's saying, look, if you want to abide, if you want to have the kind of intimacy that I'm saying you can have, then you can't just do your own thing and ignore everything I'm talking to you about. You got to do what I command. And you know this. Do you know when, now that I have grandkids, you see this again. Do you know when you should be most concerned about your toddler during waking hours? When it's quiet. I haven't heard from him for a while. I spent 15 minutes. I haven't heard anything. Do you know what happens? You drop everything you're doing to go find out what is going on, right? Because sure as shooting, they're doing something that either they know they shouldn't be doing, right? They're getting into something, and all of a sudden, they're really, really quiet. And you're like, God, stop! What are you doing? You can't be doing that! You know, that's when you walk around the corner, and there's stuff all over the floor, or who knows what they're doing, right? Because children know, deep down, when they're doing the wrong thing, they don't really want to see mom and dad. They avoid you. It's uncomfortable. Do you know when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, you know what the biggest consequence was? Is that they were separated from God and they could no longer walk with him in the cool of the day. He said, I got to kick you out. You got to leave the garden. This communion, this intimacy that we once enjoyed is gone because you chose to do your own thing. It wasn't that he didn't care for them. It wasn't that he still didn't see them valuable. It wasn't that he wasn't for them. He said, you have broken what's going on between us. Was the whole reason Jesus came and died is what we're going to celebrate communion in a couple minutes. To say, look, I want to restore that. I want to bring that back. Because you're all going to make mistakes and you're all going to do things. But when we live in constant disobedience and sin, we cannot remain in Jesus or abide in him well. We lose that intimacy and quite frankly, we don't even want it at that point. So how do you break this barrier? Confess and repent. There is no shortcut on this one. And just so you understand those two terms, confession is just recognizing it. Confession is going to God and saying, look, you know what? The more I listen to you about this, the more I hear what you're saying, I've made a mistake. I can't make excuses for this anymore. It's not their fault. It's not their fault. It's not your fault. This is me. I'm owning this. That's confession. The problem is many of us stop at confession because confession kind of feels good and we tell God, oh, it's horrible. I shouldn't have done it. I'm really sorry. And then we go back and we do it again and again and again and again and again. Right? Repentance is saying, okay, I recognize it. Now, God, I don't want to do this. I want to go a new direction. I want to obey. I want to listen. I want to move the trajectory of my life in a new direction. That's repentance. And where this really gets us, I'm not talking like, because when I was a kid, I would get all hung up in my head on this because I would think, okay, I sinned today. In fact, I had this thing. I don't know if I should share it. Well, my brother's not here. So I had this hang up with my older brother, because I thought that if you did anything wrong, you had to confess it immediately or everything was terrible all the time with God and with other people. And so, you know, we would go play tennis and I would get really angry because I would lose regularly because he was older than me. And then I would do something and then I'd feel really bad. And I'd say, oh, you know, brother, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he used to get sick and tired of it. He said, why are you apologizing? Because you just do the same things over and over. And that's not really what we're talking about here. When we talk about this whole idea and Jesus is saying, look, remain in me, my love, and keep my commands. This isn't those things that just happen here and there. This is that pattern of disobedience where we say, I will not, or I don't want to, or this is just tripping me up and I'm really not making any effort at all to move in the right direction. And you say, well, what are the commands? Because that would be my question. Remember with the context. They're walking to the garden and Jesus is about to be arrested. And he's saying, look, just follow my commands. Do you know what commands they were supposed to follow? There were only two. He said, love God, love others. Everything else that we read that Jesus told them to do was just descriptors of how to do those two things. And so you say, well, what commands? Jesus is saying, look, you want to be in intimacy with me, then love me. And love the people that I love, which is everybody. Which means when you're at odds with people and you will not forgive and you're doing all these things, you cannot be in intimacy with God because you're breaking the commands he told you to run with. We never get this perfectly, but we should always be moving in the direction of God in confession and repentance. So, we stand on the edge of another school year. If you have kids, this is really a big deal for you. Fall and all the activities of September to December are staring you in the face. And before we know it, we'll have Thanksgiving and then Christmas. And in the meantime, there'll be kids and sports and coaching and church meetings and all kinds of stuff going on. Let me tell you, in the midst of this, we have all the ongoing battles with our own life and our own health and our own sins. And I'm telling you, this fall can be different than every other one for you. You can actually get to Christmas this year and not be frazzled. You can be fruitful in the weeks and the months that are in front of us. You can gain victory over those sins and those habits that have plagued you for years. You can actually be rested and leaving worry behind this fall. You can have an intimacy with God that you have never had before that utterly changes your life.